Hello, this is Phil Collinson of Spring Hill fame. You're listening to Tachyon TV, and you probably shouldn't be.
Hello and welcome to a very special Tachyon TV live from Los Angeles at Gallifrey One with exclusive interviews from Mark Wright.
Didn't he get the rights to do a Dark Devious version of Whizbit?
Neb Fountain.
Most of the women are wearing Rob Sheeran costumes, at least I think they are.
David J. Howe.
It's California and there's palm trees in the roads and it's just cool.
Kai Owen.
Eve Miles has got a beautiful behind. Yeah, cracking ass, cracking ass.
Wendy Padbury.
She looks amazing. I'm absolutely gutted.
Fraser Hines.
And in fact, if you don't give Fraser the part, Mummy and I are going to leave home.
Phil Ford.
The Russell knew who I was.
Oh, Phil Ford, Captain Scarlet, Phil Ford.
Tony Haddock.
Hello, I'm Tony Michelle Haddock, and you're listening to Tachyon TV.
Rob Sherman.
I'm a very angry writer.
Terence Dix.
If we give him a hovercraft, he might go.
And special guest, Phil Collinson.
Kind of didn't really know whether I'd wee myself, really.
Here we are at Gallifrey One.
It's very interesting. There's a lot of very friendly people here. We've already met some nice people like Steve Roberts of Restoration Team fame.
It beats Stockton.
It's always nice to be in a hotel that isn't by the side of a windy A road in the northeast. Much nicer to be in a rain-lashed hotel by the side of Los Angeles Airport.
Damien's looking tired. What do you think is the biggest difference between this and Stockton?
The Zanzibar. In a word, the Zanzibar. Until I'd see two slappers fighting at 2:30 in the morning, I'll not be happy.
I'll see what I can arrange. So the plan tonight is to do a bit of karaoke. What song are you going to do?
We sing in praise of total war.
Dang, 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 dang.
We're very pleased to have David J. Howe here. Hello, David.
Hello, good evening.
That's thrown me for a start, because it's broad daylight out there. Okay, David.
I'm still in London time.
We're all on this strange kind of time where we've been up far too late. So how's your experience of the convention been so far?
I've had a whale of a time, I always do. It's one of the friendliest conventions I've ever been to. This is my 10th time in succession. So they must be doing something right.
10th in succession, yeah. That's impressive.
10th in succession, yeah. But it's a fabulous, fabulous convention and they all put so much work into it. It's so enjoyable and friendly, and I think that's the key, is everybody's so friendly, and they're very welcoming to everybody, and it's just very, very cool, and it's nice. And in any case, it's freezing cold in England, and you come over here, and it pisses with rain, but the sun's out, and it's California, and there's palm trees in the roads, and it's just cool.
Yeah, I mean, you've been around in fandom for a long while, and when I was younger, you seemed to crop up a lot in the 80s as I would say the acceptable face of fandom. What was that like?
I've never heard that term before, acceptable face of fandom.
Well, I think it was basically...
I'm not on the DVDs. How can I have an acceptable face?
They wanted to have Doctor Who fans who looked slightly eccentric, but you looked normal.
I did. I was almost too normal, wasn't I?
You were the sort of ying to Ian Levine's yang.
Oh, for goodness sake. Okay. Did I mention how good California is and how super the palm trees are in the roads? It's absolutely awesome here.
And tell us, has come up with some great publications. My own personal favourite, I think, is your own The Target book. Which is the closest thing to Doctor Who porn, I think, at least I've seen, or I want to see.
Now, you see, I thought that was the companions book that I did. I mean, I remember reading a review of that somewhere that said, it's just a shame it's too heavy to hold in one hand, which I thought was the greatest review comment I ever had about one of my books.
Can you tell us a bit about The Target book? Because it looks to me to be a labour of love.
Absolutely,
and it's an absolutely wonderful looking book.
Well, I mean, The Target book came about. I mean, I'd been commissioned by Doctor Who magazine to do a series of articles on the history of the Target books, and I really enjoyed reading researching them and in tracking down all the people involved in the early days, the editors, the designers and people. And I thought, well, I've got all these articles, I've got the words, I've got all the covers. As I said, I'm a real hoarder, I collect everything. And so it was a case of just assembling all the stuff that I'd collected over the years, adverts, trade adverts, the unused covers, We went back to all the artists that I'd already spoken to for time frame when I did that, because we needed permission to use all the artwork in that. And really, the book just kind of came together from all of that.
I think it's quite an important book because for people of a certain age, the novelisations are obviously were their only access to Who for a long while, certainly in my case, and it's like the alternative universe of Who. Yeah. I mean, what's coming up with Tell Us? What are your new projects?
I mean, we've got some great horror film books that we've been working on. We had Silver Scream came out end of last year. Which is just a fantastic look at like old horror films from the 20s, 30s, 40s. And then to complement that, we've got another big full-colour book called It Lives Again, which we're very, very pleased with, that covers modern horror, which is looking at sort of horror from 2000 onwards. So yeah, so we've got those two. I mean, and then this year, 2009, we've got a guide to Space 1999 coming out. And then we've also got a guide to Sapphire and Steel coming up this year.
We were just talking about that the other day. Nice, easy-ish question to round things up with.
All
right, okay. Target novelisations.
Yes.
What's your favourite cover? What's your least favourite cover?
I have so many favourite covers of the Target novelisations.
But you're only allowed to say one.
I am only allowed to say one. Can I have two?
You can have two.
Ones that made the most impression on me when I first got the books. The first one was Talons of Wayne Chiang, because I remember when I first got the cover proof of that, I just thought it was just like absolutely awesome. The other one was The Mutants, because I think that was Jeff Cummings' first one. And it was just such an... Because it was full bleed as well.
Yeah.
We were so used to them having the white outline and stuff. And then
the weirdest bit about that was the changing face of Doctor Who. The Doctor on the portrayed on the cover of this book.
Yeah, he didn't look good. He didn't look good. No, that's right. That was John before the makeup went on. But no, I mean, I could choose so many more.
I mean, I must say I'm a bit of a clack man myself.
Except Earthshock, Ark of Infinity... which are like the most revolting covers I've ever seen on a book ever, with the exception of ones published through Lulu.
That seems an appropriate note to end. Thank you very much, David.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Okay, we're joined by a friend of the site, Nev Fountain. Nev's been at Galley all weekend. How's it been for you?
Oh, it's been great. I haven't done the last 3 years, and it's like I've never been away. Most of the convention attendees are still wearing the same clothes, actually. It's marvellous. Things have changed, though, with the new series. It's kind of gained a lot of pace. There's a lot of people wearing Rob Sheeran costumes, which is quite a radical departure. Most of the women are wearing Rob Sheeran costumes, at least I think they are.
There was an introduction to Sheeran cosplay session yesterday, wasn't there, I believe?
It was all maroon shirts, I believe.
Sheeran cosplay. What on earth is that?
Highlights so far?
Highlights was Toby's fantastic play Moth Take My Doctor Who Scarf, which was phenomenally badly handled by the convention. I mean, it's a one-man show with two music cues. How can you fuck that up, really? They really have to be quite malicious to actually screw up something like that. You know, I've seen things done in pubs which are better sorted than that. They're very, very grudging in their music cues.
Toby took it well, though, didn't he? I mean, he only threatened to kill the entire population of the US, rather, but he decided he'd leave Canada alone.
I would like those guys behind the desk to do a Pink Floyd concert or something, just to see their metal.
So we've got Mark Wright here from Big Finish fame. Mark, how are you finding the convention?
I'm finding it great, although going to bed at 4 a.m. three nights in a row is not great.
We're all going to suffer. What's it going to be like next Wednesday?
Oh God, well, I think we're going to hit the brick wall. Actually, I'll probably still be here. I probably won't be able to find my way out of the hotel.
More importantly, how do you think it's going to impact on the Big Finish range?
They'll be a lot quieter.
Yeah,
too loud.
They'll be a lot quieter. I'll be typing much slower and much quieter from now on.
Oh, can't you bring those music cues down just a little bit?
Get the guys who did Moth Tape and Doctor Who Scarf to do the music cues.
We'll have none whatsoever in that case.
No, you'll have them sort of at the end, in the extras. You'll have them completely.
Yeah, for those who are interested, the sound cues are in the CD extras at the end, narrated by Nicholas Briggs.
Doctor Who, the music cues. Done by the Outpost Gallery technical team.
But no, I'm having a great weekend. It's just...
What's your highlight been so far?
I think an hour with Gary Russell.
You got to tell me about that. I miss that tragically. What did he? Was it knitting patterns? recipe?
Kind of hints on beekeeping.
Is that code?
No. I was just very, very amused by the prospect of a panel called An Hour with Gary Russell.
And it ran for 2 hours, didn't it?
Now you're putting words in my mouth.
So tell me, on the Big Finish Range, seriously, what are you working on at the moment?
Well, we've just got the new series of Iris Wildtime coming out with Katie Manning. We had about about 2 weeks to write the whole lot because you went, darling, I'm coming over. so we just kind of contacted some writers and just like, write the script in 2 days.
So you have like an Irish wartime crisis, like students have an essay crisis, you know. Oh God, she's coming.
So we're doing four, and they're all kind of very lightly pastiching a different decade of Doctor Who. So we have a 60s one, which is kind of based under siege. We have one by Paul Mars called Land of Wonder, which is kind of Iris exiled to Earth when the handbrake goes on the bus and she's too embarrassed to tell anybody, working for an organisation called Meow, which is really sweet. We've got a Simon Gurrier script called The Two Irises.
Oh, not him.
Which is based on Tom Baker's press conference when he announced he was leaving the role. Iris has a press conference. I'm giving it up. I'm bored of being Iris Wildtime, and I wish my successor the very best of luck, whoever she or he may be. And then we've got a story set in San Francisco called The Panda Invasion, which is set on New Year's Eve 1999.
Obviously, we're in LA. It's a bit different to Stockton. I think we can all agree that. What do you think the main differences between the UK and the US conventions?
Further away, jet lag. Although actually going to Stockton, I think you get jet lag. I just think everybody's so friendly, and everybody has something to say to you, mostly good. Well, there's somebody come and go, oh yeah, hey, you wrote that audio, I didn't like that. Okay, thank you. Thank you for coming and your contribution.
Great. You know. Well, they're often dressed in an incredible outfit when they're telling you that.
Yes, usually it's the deadly.
Yeah, it's called American.
I've seen some fantastic William Hartnells this weekend just going around.
Welcome to my life.
I like the 7 foot tall Perry.
That's the thing I think I notice more here is that there are more costumes, there's more cosplay. Which sounds like something you'd do in Soho, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, cosplay, I mean, never heard of it. I just mentioned it to him briefly. Yeah.
I thought that was in the character of the Big Finish Oreo.
I thought it was
cosplay, especially in my wine.
I thought it was something you did with a lettuce.
That's giving me ideas now. And a stopwatch.
Cosplay sounds like something that Clive Doig would produce.
And on that bombshell, we'll leave it there, I think. Thanks very much, Mark. Hi, this is Tacky on TV. We're reporting from the Gallifrey One convention. I'm very pleased to say we've got Mr. Kai Owen with us. Hi, Kai.
How you doing?
And we're all here to talk about a programme that's very important to all of us, and I know that a lot of our listeners are really keen on it as well. It's this. The programme is, of course, Tipping Ostad. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, Tipping Ostad is a Welsh language soap opera set on an estate in Carnarvon in North Wales, and it tells a story of battling families, sort of duelling cousins, and lots of incest. And
so very like Torchwood.
Oh yeah. Torchwood. I forgot about that. Yeah. a bit like Torchwood. Yeah, and there's a few scary monsters in Carnarvon as well. Believe you me, there is.
Are you from Conwy originally? Is that right?
I'm from Llanrwst, Conwy's the county. Aberconwy's the county, but Llanrwst is in the heart of Snowdonia, the Conwy Valley. It's gorgeous there.
It's the smallest house in Britain still in Conwy.
Yeah, in the pier, yeah. Yeah, the pier, there's a good couple of nice pubs there. That's still there.
Excellent. So we were talking a bit earlier to Phil Ford about the episode Something Borrowed, which featured you very heavily. Obviously, it was your wedding day. What are your memories of working on that?
Cracking, really. Luckily, we're here in a convention, and one of the things I had to do while I'm here was do a live audio commentary on Something Borrowed. I'm glad I did now, because I can answer your question. Amazing episode of film, such good fun. Nerys uses my mother, turned into a monster, getting blown to bits by Jack. Amazing, you know?
What was it like working with Nerys?
Oh, Nerys Hughes is fantastic. She's so gorgeous. I can imagine her being very much like Eve Miles is now when in her day and age, you know? In fact, it was whilst we were filming, or just finished filming Something Borrowed, that I caught an episode of Live Birds. I saw it on one of those ones back home, UK TV Go, something like that. I just watched it and went, yeah, she looks hot. Yeah. Really hot.
And speaking of hot women, differences between US conventions and UK conventions.
I've been probably drunk since I got here. Actually, I've drunk slowly and steadily throughout the whole weekend. You know, the fans who come to the conventions back at home tend to get drunk with you all the way through the weekend as well. I think they're a bit more wilder back home, especially the Torchwood events. There's a young crowd to it, and they have a fantastic bloody time, and get smashed. You know, in the parties at night. They really do go crazy.
The thing that I've noticed is a lot of the fans here, I mean, it's very friendly and we're very well organised, but they seem to commit a lot of their time. In the UK, people commit a lot of their time to drinking. which I could have sympathy with. But here they commit a lot of time to costume design and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. The questions are more about the acting. Whilst in the UK, literally, whenever I do a Q&A, I always open it up with, you can ask me anything. And in the UK, they really do ask you anything. Here, they are really more interested in the creation of the character, the preparation for the role, techniques during filming, which is fine. I'm happy to answer that, but you know, you get more filthy questions back home.
So speaking of filthy, I was at a panel, Gareth David Lloyd. Have you come across his potty mouth before?
Oh, he's got a filthy mouth. Yeah, definitely. I've toned it down a bit for this one, I think, because I'm usually whip him into a frenzy, talk about everything. I mean, the filthy the better, really. And in the last Hub convention in Northampton, we were snogging, we had our ass out, everything, you know. Yeah.
There's still time to get your ass out later, isn't there?
Yeah, in the closing ceremony. Yeah. Don't know how well it'll go down here though.
In terms of Torchwood, we know that Children of Earth is due to come out at some point soon-ish. Can you tell us anything without giving things away?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, well, I don't know when it's coming out. I think it's probably going to come out in June. That's the last thing I've heard, but that could change. It's going to air the same time in the US as in Britain as well, so the same week. It's also going to be bigger, faster, quicker, scarier, more bleak, more harrowing than any other Torchwood episode.
Yeah, it's really big in the States, isn't it, Torchwood? I think coming here and seeing the fans, it is really...
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, to be recognised in the States and stuff, it's a bit bizarre. I can't quite believe I'm in LA talking to you. You know what I mean? I go home tomorrow and I don't quite believe I'd have been when I land. Have I just been to LA for 3 or 4 days?
That's some kind of mad mirage, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely bonkers. And I haven't really mentioned that the airport is literally across the road as we speak. So, but... The fans have been great. Yeah, they love it, don't they?
Well, I was through the haze of the jet lag when I got here on Tuesday. I kind of tried to get back to the bar and saw a table and saw James Moran surrounded by a gaggle of women in their early 20s, all Torchwood fans. And when I was speaking to them, it basically transpired that some of them hadn't even watched Doctor Who. It was Torchwood.
Yeah, it's more. I think it's bigger than Doctor Who over here. It's the highest rating show ever for BBC America.
Talking of Eve Mars, you seem to have a great relationship on screen. There's a really good chemistry. I mean, what's it like working with her?
Ah, she's the best. I love Eve. I miss Eve. We're big mates, me and Eve. Big mates. Socialise together, hang out together. And obviously, everything that I do in Torchwood is with Eve, pretty much. So, you know, to have that friendly face there and stuff. She's so brilliant as well. So full of energy, so wonderfully funny to be around, warm, caring. Yeah, I can't speak either of it. I love Eve to bits.
And a fine bottom, I remember you saying at the last game.
See, that was in Bradford, wasn't it? See, I'm always drunk at these and I fucking forget. I forget. No, I wasn't. I kept going on about how brilliant it was to kiss her.
You and PC Andy.
Yeah, Tom, lovely. Good guy. No, yeah, I mean, that's what I get drunk at these things. And they end up on YouTube and things like that.
Cameras up there if you just...
Yeah, yeah. Hello, everybody. Eve Miles has got a beautiful behind. Yeah, cracking ass. I've got a fiance, you know, and my I love my fiance to bits, but she knows.
There are a few Gwens around, though, aren't there?
Yeah, yeah. I kissed one last night in a photo. Again, Cassandra's going to listen to this next week.
In a photo. What's her email address? Send the link.
In a photo, yeah. There's a good few of them. People paint the gaps on the teeth and everything, don't they?
Yeah.
Which I find a bit crazy, but it's, you know, it's fair play. They make the effort and they're living the dream and enjoying themselves, aren't they?
There was a question about the future of Torchwood. Yeah. About what's going to happen. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, Torchwood is very much left... Torchwood needs new members, basically. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with the death of Owen and Toshiko, you know, the space is there to be filled. So I think they're constantly on the lookout for new members. I can't say anything.
Will they accept comedy website personnel?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, why not? You just come in. I'm up for anything.
I'll send the CV.
I'm up for anything. I want Ant Dec to join. they could change every week. They could have a guest double act every week, couldn't they?
It'd be like in Police Squad. Remember that series in the 80s? A guest dog that's killed at the beginning of the
season. It'd be quite funny, wouldn't it? They've just recruited. That's a great idea. Just recruit. They go for Ant and Dec, and Dick and Dom, Richard and Judy.
Well, we'll just make a copyright statement in case somebody steals this idea now.
Yeah.
Tacky on TV and Kai Owen.
Yeah, 15th of February 2009.
Send it to the bank manager now. We'll be fine. So, it's going to be, I think, scheduled over 1 week, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a 5-hour...
Event TV, I think they call it, don't they?
That's what they reckon, yeah. It's going to be heavy going, because it's quite traumatic. But I think it'll work a treat, because it's so quick and pacey. It does not stop from the opening, do you know what I mean? It's Torchwood on the run. So it's scary, you know what I mean? Like, it's pacey, it's a big chase, basically.
Thanks very much for talking to us, and hopefully we'll see you in a bar later with Phil.
I'll be in the bar, guaranteed. I'm just having a drink of ice-cold Bud Light here.
And for all of you in rainy UK, ha ha.
Yeah, it's lovely, actually, here. It's really lovely.
Thanks, Kai.
No worries.
We've got an exclusive here at Tachyon TV. We've actually got the Terence Dixers here to talk to each other about Doctor Who.
Well, Barry said if we see Terence at the convention, you really must go and say hello to me. So I said I would. When you worked on the series, Terence, did you like Pertwee? I mean, Barry always said to me he wasn't sure he was a good doctor or not. What do you think?
Well, Pertwee, he used to come up to me and he said, I don't like to say this gobbledygook. And
well, gobbledygook is right. Barry said to me right from the first day, we wanted Tom Baker.
Tom Baker?
It took 5 years to get rid of Pertwee, and we had to say in the end, if we give him a hovercraft, he might go. If we write a story which has a hovercraft in it, maybe he'll take the hint and he'll just, you know, piss off. And it took him years to do it.
You know, when we told John Pertwee we were getting rid of him, he turned completely green.
Green with anger.
And the colour for Sack Doctor Who's is green. I don't know why that is, but it's green.
Extraordinary thing. I found by the end of the time when I was writing for Target quite a lot that some of them would last hour and a half to watch on TV, but writing them took about half that time. Barry said,
write a story called Wobot? Because I think that would be terribly amusing.
I mean, I wanted to call it The Vampire Mutations, you see, because that's funnier for me to say than State of Decay.
He said,
but Christopher H. Bidmead was a bit of a kid. Gundan Warrior Wobot is green if you watch it with the colour turned up. Eric Saywood, you see, he loves his Cybermen. And I said, I don't like them. I want to have a Wazzed on Warrior Robot.
And for some reason, Saywood liked that and smiled a lot when I said it.
I think he thought it was a Cyberman, you see. I think he thought it was the same costume, just with somebody dancing about looking a bit like a brat. And for that reason, he got away with it, you see. Eric never read the scripts. He just saw how many Cybermen were in it. And that was enough for Eric, you see.
Bob used to sit there smoking his pipe, and he'd go completely green. I don't know why that is.
It was because of what he put in the pipe, wasn't it, you see. Barry said, let's see if we can poison Bob Holmes, you see. And I said, I never liked the Quotons. I never liked the Space Pirates. He's a bit of a tall ex-policeman, you see. Bit of a sadist. And what he said, and I said to him, I want a historical Bob. He said, I don't like historicals, Derry. And I said, and years later, you see, he got his revenge. And
he got me to write a story set in Spain on a lighthouse, getting rid of Turlo, and...
Can't I just have a robot in it?
Robot.
You see, in Brain of Morbius, originally it was a robot, and then it turned out to be not a robot, and I said, put some brand pseudonym on. It made me very amused, and I opened the Radio Times and saw, then actually called him Robin Brand, and I phoned up Bob Holmes and said, that's very funny, I'm suing you. You are a complete git. I'm going to ruin all of your books when I novelise them, which is what I did. Barry said to me,
the Dixers will be on tour starting next month. And we're very, very pleased to say we have here Fraser Hines.
Hello.
And Wendy Bradbury.
Hello.
First, Fraser, can I ask, we're all here for one reason, really, and that's a shared love of a programme which we all like to meet up and talk about, and that, of course, is Emmerdale Farm. Can you tell us how you got into Emmerdale Farm?
Yeah, I used to go out with an actress called Lisa Goddard. We've known each other when we were 11, 12 years old. She went off to Australia to do Skippy. Then she came back when she was about 18 or 19, and she was doing a show. I was just finishing off Doctor Who, the Warp Games, and I saw this lovely blonde walking along the corridors of BBC, and I said, excuse me. She turned around, and it was Lisa. She was doing a thing called Take Three Girls.
So very, very good programme.
Yeah, it was. So we immediately kind of like, hugged and kissed, we must have supper. We went out for about a year, and then we drifted apart, but we still stayed friends. And then so much so that I was having Sunday lunch at Recklesham Farmhouse, where her father lives, down in Farnham. And I just happened to say to him, David, what are you doing now? You know, you're back in England. And he said, I'm doing this sort of afternoon programme, 6 episodes or 13 episodes about a farming family. He said, I've got the mother, I've got the elder son, I haven't got the younger son yet. And Lisa said, well, Daddy, he's having lunch opposite you. It's Fraser. He's from Yorkshire. And in fact, if you don't give Fraser the part, Mummy and I are going to leave home. So it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Absolutely. I mean, quite rare. At the time, it was daytime television had just started when Emmerdale, and it wasn't an all-year-round soap, was it?
No, Emmerdale was the only one still going. There was Mark Personal, General Hospital, Harriet's Back in Town, Crown Court, and Emmerdale Farm. Of all those five, Emmerdale's still the only one going.
Obviously, joking aside, it's not just Emmerdale Farm we want to talk about. Wendy, we obviously want to talk about Crossroads a little bit as well. Could you tell me how you got into Crossroads?
Yeah. If I must, yes. Well, I just auditioned for the part, along with other actresses, just the same as I did with Doctor Who. I auditioned in London and got the part. And it was fantastic training for me, of course, because then, if I'm not mistaken, it went out every evening in the beginning.
It was 5 days a week, wasn't it?
Yeah, five days
live.
A week, that's right.
Was it live as well?
It wasn't live, but it might as well have been.
It was like as live, wasn't it? I think somebody once I spoke to who worked on it said you had to basically either swear or kill someone for them to say cut.
Yeah, you truly did have to swear. Otherwise, there was no way they were going to stop.
And that was just the viewers.
And I'm sure they did. but training-wise, you know, at such a young age, it was unbelievable because you never had time to think too much. You just had to get on, learn your lines and do it. And that stood me in good stead, actually, for the future.
And what was it like working with Noel Gordon, the legendary, I have to say, Noel Gordon?
Yeah, it's lovely in this hotel, isn't it?
Why do I always get that reaction to that question? Getting to Doctor Who, I think ostensibly we're supposed to be talking about that. As a programme to make, how did it compare to making other programmes at the time that you'd worked on before?
Again, like Crossroads, almost as live. You'd rehearse it, you'd shoot from page one right to page 48. You'd rehearse from page one. Nowadays, they'd do all the inside of the TARDIS scenes, then they'd do all the outside of the moon base scenes, then we'd go to so-and-so's office scenes. They'd shoot them like a film. But in our day, you would shoot and you'd break for supper at 7 o'clock, you'd go and have something to eat, and then 8 o'clock, whatever, red light would come on, you do a scene. You might do three scenes together from inside the TARDIS, outside the TARDIS, inside again, as in one. They didn't have the editing techniques.
And they edited in camera, didn't they, basically?
Yeah.
So if you fluffed or dried on the third scene, they couldn't put the scissors in, so nine times out of ten, you had to go back to the first page again. So it was I had theatre training, and you had theatre training as well. So that kind of helps you because you were used to doing three scenes together.
Yeah, I mean, it was luxury suddenly for me, for doing Doctor Who, to have this week, this proper week's rehearsal, and then record a show as in a theatre drama, from beginning to end. So for me, that was sheer luxury after the mania of Crossroads.
Patrick had a ploy that you read Monday morning, you read the episode and they timed it, and he made us all speak very slowly. Because if you spoke quickly, they'd say, actually, we're 3 minutes short here.
Because we have to write you another
another four scenes. Whereas they would never allow for, as you walk down the corridor, Jamie walks down the corridor, Zoe meets him, they go, no, that's 3 seconds. But in actual fact, to walk down that corridor, so we used to speak very slowly. And any guest actors speak slowly at the read-through. otherwise, they'll make another three scenes to do.
We're here at the convention. Yeah. You've been to some UK conventions as well. What do you think the main difference? Fraser, if I could ask you first.
I think the Americans are kind of friendly, and they're so grateful that you've come over. Well, oh, thank you for coming over. Yeah, you've come all the way from England to see us. We're so grateful. Sometimes in England, you feel the fans might go, oh, I bet getting paid a bloody fortune to be here. You know? Yeah, what are you doing here? You know, why aren't you at home?
How about you, Wendy?
Yeah, I agree with that. But also, I think that it appears to me that the American fans are much more relaxed about the whole thing. Whether that's a cultural thing, that they're very, on the whole, confident as people. They can talk a lot. English fans can be quite nervy sometimes, which is a bit unsettling.
Highly strung, or should be.
Yes, what it is an American will come up and say, hi, Fraser, I love it to see you. an English fan will want to say that,
yeah,
but they
but
feel
not have the nerve.
They'll have to say, you're not as tall as I thought you were, or you've got a spot on your chin. They say something derogatory.
The thing that I noticed here, it seems remarkably relaxed.
Well, there's a woman that runs it here who you wouldn't argue with, let's face it.
Oh, I think I've met her. Oh, yeah.
I mean, the thing about Gallifrey particularly, in my opinion, is it's one of the best, from our point of view, organised conventions. It's stress-free because they can get stressful.
One of the things that's interesting about the convention, the Americans are really even keener on dressing up. What is it like when you see versions of yourself wandering around the hotel?
Well, that's very bizarre, actually, because this convention is the first time I've ever seen anybody in a Zoe costume in one of the legendary cat suits.
Oh, really?
Mm. And she looks amazing. I'm absolutely gutted. No, she looks amazing. So, no, I've
but
seen.
You did. So, I mean, that's just looking exactly as you.
He's so smooth.
So smooth. Nothing changes, does it, really?
Well, it's been lovely to talk to you. We don't want to take up too much of your time. But
can I just say that I think it's a great honour to see the guys walking around in kilts, because a kilt is not actually. Most guys want to dress, you know, as a Sontaran or something really rugged and tough. But I think it's great when the guys are wearing kilts.
I did hear one guy talking at length about Jamie's dirk. I think that's what he said, anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so cheap, I'm sorry. Yeah. Anyway, Fraser, Wendy, thanks very much.
No, you're welcome.
So here we are at Galley. We're sitting by the pool, just soaking up the general ambiance. John, any thoughts about the convention so far?
Well, we did an interesting panel this morning about podcasting, which had Podshock people and Radio Free Scaro. There were no actual fights. There were no squabbles. Tensions got a little bit high, but, you know, when you're in the political world of podcasting, you always get... It's a high-octane environment. You know, you're talking about driven individuals. It gets a bit passionate every now and again.
Are there any more questions? One of the podcasting trends that I thought I'd hate straight out that I've come to love is the old series and new series commentary. But is it easier to do a commentary on a total crap episode like Survival?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yes. Yes. A cast of bad British comedic duos. Oh, yeah.
Can I just say that, you know, there are many McCoy fans here who might quibble with Survival being rubbish.
I
wouldn't.
Not that I'm one of them. But yes, it is. Why would we do a podcast commentary on The Caves of Androzani? What would it be like? I mean, you could do an interesting podcast. Some people may well like it, but it's not our thing. It would not be. There's not an awful lot to say about The Caves of Androzani. Whereas there's an awful lot to say about any number of other ones. Claws of Axos, undo it.
I think lack of topics probably drove us to fan commentary.
Yeah, yeah.
How the Wing Chiang ones.
Yeah.
Which, like you said, was the toughest episode of all the Doobies. Yeah. You're sitting there.
Watching it.
This is awesome. Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Yeah. We had 3 minutes with the rack, and that was basically the best bit we could probably. Our favorite one to date, I think, was the Monster of Peladon, when we got that.
Because
we cut it to pieces and deservedly.
But the thing about it is, I mean, you're quite right. I mean, how interesting is a podcast where people go, oh, that's great acting, oh, that's great writing, all the way through? It's not particularly interesting. But the reason we stopped doing podcast commentaries, we start to bore ourselves with the easy targetness of it. And the last one we did was
Stolen Earth,
and Neil will never watch that episode again because he watched it about 35 times to sync up the commentary.
Oh, no.
Because we actually wrote it, because we were so annoyed with the quality, we thought the lack of quality towards the end of our podcast commentaries, that we actually wrote our podcast commentary in advance, which took a lot of time.
It was complicated.
And then we had to sync it.
Because we had phone calls coming in from Toby Hago
and Clayton Hickman and people like that.
Trying to sync them up so that it connected with the visuals.
Mm-hmm. Howard Pinter.
Howard Pinter, yeah. That's right. So there were all these kind of things that we did. And Neil was like a kind of like World War I victim at the end of it. I mean, he had like a 1,000-yard stare of a man who'd seen an episode far too many times to sync it up. And so there's no way we're going to do any more of them, basically.
I think on Podshock, we tended not to favour doing commentaries, although probably our most famous one was that we did one for the TV movie.
We did?
Did we do it?
It was so famous that we didn't do it. No.
I thought we did. I think it was Christmas Invasion.
Oh, was it the Christmas Invasion?
You said it was your most famous podcast, and you can't remember what it was.
No, I think what I'm going to confuse is we might.
Hello, I'm Rula Lenska. You've probably heard of me because I am internationally famous. Do you own a microphone and have far too much time on your hands? Do you dress like a lesbian from the 1980s? And do you have a revolutionary new media business model that no one, not even yourself, understands? If so, then congratulations! You've got all you need to be a Doctor Who podcaster.
But wait! Have you considered the risks?
For instance, that overwhelming sense of ennui you experience once you've entered hour 5 of your latest recording. The communicable diseases you can pick up from shared microphones. And the likelihood of offending Z-list Doctor Who stars whose egos simply won't tolerate your biting satire. That is why I urge you to support Flange, the Federation of Long and Not Good Entertainment. Just £5 of your money could help Flange to alleviate these dangers and provide those long-winded podcasting f***ers with editing software and a much-needed sense of perspective. Please send whatever you can afford to me, Rula Lenska, care of Room 805, the Marriott Hotel, Los Angeles Airport, California, America, W12-8QT. Thank you so much.
Okay, we're joined by a rather husky voice, Rob Sherman. How's your experience of Gallifrey been this year?
It destroyed my voice. You know, okay, on the plus side, I was able to meet Doctor Who people. On the negative side, it destroyed my ability to talk. Is that a good trade-off? I don't know. Yes, Wendy Padbury was very nice. She played Zoe in Badger Charlton stories. It was lovely to meet her. But did I want to sacrifice my voice to meet her? I'm not certain. She was in the Wheel in Space, for God's sake. So, no, it's been a very nice time, but I'm angry now. I'm angry at the world. I'm angry at human anatomy for meaning that I can't talk. I'm not happy. I'm a very angry writer of Dalek. It's on season one. Why not buy the DVD? I actually get royalties. I only survive on the royalties of that DVD. Please buy it. Please. Amazon reduced it. Bastards. I need them to be charging at full price. Season 4 is so expensive I can't even afford it. But season 1, let's make that virtually free. You git, Amazon.co.uk.
Don't hit me, Rob.
If all of our podcasters club together and buy a copy each of Dalek, you can keep this man in Strepsils and Honey and Lemon.
Thanks, Rob. We'll see you at Gallifrey 2, the first convention to be held in a house.
Yes, that would be nice.
And it's just you and me.
You and me. That's nice.
Hi, you're listening to Tachyon TV. We're at the Galley convention, and we're very pleased to say we've got Phil Ford here. Phil, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm fine, yes.
Certainly the first time I saw your name was in connection with some very highly regarded episodes of the new Captain Scarlet. How did you get involved in that?
There was a guy that I knew who optioned a series of mine, which was never made, who later became Jerry's business partner. And that's how I met Jerry on his 70th birthday down at Pinewood, when Jerry had got this other series in development called Eternity, for which I wrote a couple of pilot episodes. It never got made, but even then, they were talking about getting the rights to Captain Scarlet to do something with it, and so that's kind of how I got involved in it.
My memory of Captain Scarlet was it was very oddly marketed in the end, wasn't it? Didn't they put it on some kind of children's TV programme in the morning? What was going on there?
I mean, I don't know, to be honest, and you'd really have to ask ITV why they put it on when they did do. It was unfortunate that they put it on at that time. I feel that I know why they put it on at that time, and they put it on that time because the children's show on BBC that was on at the same time was actually doing better than they were, and they thought they put Scarlet on there, it'd lift the figures up, which it did do. But then, of course, Scarlett only ran for so many episodes. And when Scarlett, I thought it was interesting that when Scarlett finished, and people had been turning over to watch it, they axed that series. So
yeah, which was a real shame. I think it got kind of, it's like a kind of victim of that, wasn't it? Really.
Well, yeah. I mean, the problem as well is that there are not that many slots for that kind of show on ITV.
Yeah. But, even fewer now, I guess.
Well, exactly. You know, it's a great shame that that children's TV is being eroded, and it's not a question just of there not being those shows for kids to entertain them, but the great thing about doing Sarah Jane is and that shows of that kind of ilk is that it's not just about entertaining those kids, but we get kids interested in writing. My love of writing came out of watching Doctor Who as a kid, you know, and I think it's important that kids are engaged by those kinds of shows, gets their imagination going, and so they think, yeah, I quite like to write as well, or they just want to get into the business. Going back to Jerry, there were so many people that I met when I was working with Jerry who'd got into the industry because they were inspired by Thunderbirds, Captain Scarlet, and Stingray, and all those to come into the movie business.
And that's interesting, isn't it? Because as you say, with Who as well, the amount of people who have gone into it because of that, because of their love of the show, and have become quite important players in the world of television.
I think we can forget the importance of kids' TV.
And so you just mentioned about Sarah Jane. I mean, how did the work on Captain Scarlet lead to Sarah Jane?
Yeah, it did. It did, really, yes, because I went to BAFTA for the screening of the final episode of the Chris Eccleston series and met Jerry at the bar. Not Jerry. Met Russell at the bar.
That Jerry Anderson gets everywhere.
He does. Yeah. And I kind of knew Russell a little bit from Coronation Street, but not that well. And went up to him and felt that I had to introduce myself, but Russell knew who I was. Oh, Phil Ford, Captain Scarlet, Phil Ford. And then... According to Russell's version of events, we decided that we must really work together at some point. According to my version of events, I begged him for a job.
And Sarah Jane moved on to Torchwood as well, didn't it?
I was commissioned for an episode of a story for Sarah Jane, which was The Eye of the Gorgon. While I was doing that, they then commissioned me to do an episode of Torchwood. And then Russell was due to do the season finale for the first series of Sarah Jane. But Russell, being Russell, had got far too much on, as he always has, and he asked me to do it, to do the season finale, which was fantastic. So I did that. So while I was doing that, my Torchwood episode kind of went into suspended animation.
Right.
And by the time I came back to it, the story arcs had changed so much, as they do when a series can be in production. I get this phone call off Julie Garden. She said, the bad news is that we're not going to do that story anymore. Good news is, how would you like to do the wedding episode, which I knew was coming up anyway? Yes, please. So that's how I came to do Something Borrowed.
Which is a hell of an episode. And it's got the mighty Nerys Hughes. It must have been great to see Nerys in that.
It's kind of bizarre to see Nerys Hughes as a fanged Nostrovite, and then she gets blasted to hell by Jack's big gun. Narrowly having escaped being cut to ribbons by Reese with his Evil Dead style chainsaw.
Just that synopsis sort of summed it up, how great an episode that was, Something Borrowed. I mean, in true kind of Russell T Davies style, can you give us a word that's in your script for the special that's coming up?
Yeah, TARDIS.
I opened myself right in for that one, didn't I? And how are you founding a convention?
it's fantastic. It's my first Doctor Who convention. I've done conventions before. It's my first Doctor Who convention. And it's my first time in America as well.
First time in America, really?
First time in America. I am an American virgin.
Somebody else said that to me last night, but maybe we shouldn't go into that either.
I was about to say that I was until last night. We all lost our virginity last night. Yes, it's cool. It's great. Yeah, and everybody's so nice. Yeah. No, they are. They're really, really friendly, which is how we all come to lose our virginity here. But yes, right.
So are you extending your stay in America, or are you just here for the convention?
Unfortunately, I have to rush straight back because I've got to get on with work. In fact, I get back and the next day we've got the read-through for my Doctor Who. Woohoo! Yes.
Wow. And so let me get this right. Out of the specials, the four specials coming up, which one are you involved in?
The Planet of the Dead's been announced, and that's one that Gareth Roberts is writing with Russell. Mine's the next one.
Which we still don't know when it's going to be on, do we?
No. It has been... there's been various recommendation talks about when it's going to go on, but I don't think anything's yet firmed up.
Going back to the convention, We've been having some interesting conversations with people. What so far has been the strangest experience for you at this convention? I think that sums things up much better than words can possibly do. Thanks very much for that, Phil Ford.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Thank you.
Oh, okay, latest report from Gallifrey 1. We've just had a near-death experience.
I'm not sure I can... It's too soon to speak about it, actually. It was so bizarre. Damon kissed the sidewalk, as I believe they call it here, immediately after getting out of the cab. I thought the back wheels were going to lift and the car was going to flip on at least 7 occasions in a short journey. Oh.
You were in the front seat. What was it like from the front?
Exhilarating. It's good to be alive, Bruce.
And we paid him for it.
I think one of the guests put the driver up to that.
I think it was Podshot. It was Podshot that was responsible.
Podshot called the cab. Okay, I'm joined now by Tony Michelle Haddock. Tony. Sum up the Gallifrey 1 convention.
Oh, God. We've just been in a taxi with the most insane taxi driver there's ever lived. I'm becoming a bit of a podcast whore. I think I've done all the Doctor Who podcasts possible. I'm the Phil Ford of the podcast world.
You left the best till last.
I certainly did, yes. I thought you weren't going to ask me. I thought you'd moved on from me now that Collinson and Owen are in the building. But you didn't get David Lloyd, did you?
Well, how was the gig, the US premiere of Moffset, My Doctor Who's Cough? How did it go?
Well, it had potential, and then the techs got there. They were wonderful in the fact that they managed to get every single technical cue wrong, which I thought was delightfully consistent of them. I mean, the audience were lovely, but I was dying inside. Having been prepared to go on at 9:30 when I eventually went on in November, it meant that yes.
But the audience loved it, and it was definitely the highlight of the convention. That's the general consensus.
Okay.
So yes, you did some interviews and some panels. How did that go?
Oh, now yes, the first one we did was about the change of Russell T Davies to Stephen Moffat. There was a lovely lady who put her hand up and asked all of us, none of whom work on the series, not to bring back the Zabi or the gunfighters. And so we vowed that we wouldn't, so she can sleep easy.
So Johnny Ringo's not coming back?
No, and William Herndl's there in his retirement home going, but I was waiting for Ike. They've done Sarah Jane and K-9. I thought Ike Clanton would be next on the list. And so he was Charlie the barman all the time.
How did the Gareth David Lloyd panel go?
Oh, the Gareth David Lloyd panel was delightful. He was such a demure and charming and professional young man. He won over the audience, particularly the youngsters in the audience. He did a lovely moment where he explained the stopwatch moment for us, which we'd all been dying to hear, where he sort of suggested that Torchwood was... It was an unanswered question of Torchwood, much like... He basically compared Torchwood to The Prisoner, which I think is apt.
So what's it been like, this first American convention of yours? What's been your overall impression?
Oh, it's been wonderful. It's been really nice. I've had because I've not really done any of this sort of thing before. And everyone was very nice and very friendly. It was very nice to meet all sorts of lovely people. Lovely having you guys here and lots of other lovely people like that wonderful pair, Nev Fountain and Nicola Bryant.
Are the forums back up? Yeah, are they still crashed? Thank God we edit, unlike some other podcasters I could mention. And we're joined by Toby's fiancé. What's your experience of Gallifrey been?
I've absolutely loved it. I know bugger all about Doctor Who, but people have been fantastic, and I've been incredibly proud of my fiancé.
You do know about Doctor Who. You lectured a taxi driver about Doctor Who on the way.
That's true. Was any of it right?
All of it was right, apart from the bit about vid firing. You need to work on that.
She's bound to know something about it if she's ever seen his act.
Oh, we got engaged the day before Doctor Who's birthday, on November the 22nd.
She's learning.
There you go.
She's house trained.
Okay, hello, this is Tacky on TV. We're at the Gallifrey 1 convention and we're very, very pleased to have a very special guest. It's Mr. Phil Collinson. Hi, Phil.
Hello.
Now, we'd like to talk about a programme that we all have an interest in and that you worked on with Russell T Davies, and it's called Spring Hill. Can you tell us how you got involved in that?
Yeah, Spring Hill was actually my very first job in television.
and I'd been working in Liverpool for a theatre company, and I went along for an interview. My friend was one of the writers on that, alongside Russell, actually, and she got me an interview as to be script editor on the show, which I got. And I was incredibly thrilled. And one of the first people I ever met on that job was Russell T. Davis. It was a brilliant show. It was a suburban family in Liverpool. The nanny who looked after the kids was the devil, and their stepmother was an angel. You kind of take it from there, very Russell.
Yeah, it had a kind of strange transmission history, didn't it? They were on Channel 4 and then Granada or some kind of mixing.
The first series went out on Sky 1, and then the second series went out on Channel 4. But then Channel 4 decided they didn't like it, so they put it out at about 4 o'clock in the morning. So nobody ever saw it, and we got letters from people saying, well, I saw the first series, but what happened to it?
After that, you worked on some of the programmes you worked on, for instance, did you work on Peak Practice, is that correct?
I did, that was, I worked on Emmerdale, after it was a farm, after Fraser Hines' time, as a storyliner for a bit, and then I went off to be first script editor, then story editor running the script department, and then producer of Peak Practice, which was a show that I loved. As a viewer, I absolutely adored it. I don't know, the inner hypochondriac in me or something. And it was a really genuinely wonderful time, and I have really fond memories of it.
And after all of that, you ended up in a programme that, what's it called? Doctor Who, I believe, is a programme. Yeah. And you've worked on that. Is that the longest you've worked on a programme, your time on Doctor Who?
I don't really want to talk about Doctor Who. I thought you said we weren't going to do that.
That's fine. Sorry, I forgot myself for a second there. You're the producer of Coronation Street, aren't you? Oh, no, that's something
else. I'm the almost producer of Coronation Street.
What was all that about?
Well, no, they asked me to produce Coronation Street at the same time as the BBC asked me to do the job that I'm now doing, which is head of drama in Manchester. Both jobs were in Manchester, both jobs were back in the north, both jobs meant that I got to go back to my family and my friends. And I thought long and hard about it. Unfortunately, while I was thinking long and hard, the Daily Star got hold of a memo that someone sent to someone in Granada, say, with my name on it. And they did a page 3 article and stuck my head on the top of a Dalek and said I was the new exterminator of Weatherfield. So I sort of really...
That's a hell of a job title.
Yeah, exterminator of Weatherfield, and kind of fabricated all these people I was going to kill off. And so that kind of decided it for me, really. I kind of thought, well, I can't do it now. So I'm back in Manchester doing that.
But head of drama at BBC Manchester, that sounds like such an exciting job. I mean, so how long have you been doing that, and what kind of things are you planning at the moment?
I've been doing that for 6 months, and we don't have anything commissioned yet, which doesn't mean that it's all being an abject failure. It means that it's taking time. Essentially, we've walked into an empty building. The BBC's expanding. They're building a new HQ up in Manchester. And they decided they wanted a permanent drama home there. So, you know, the ambition is, by the time we move in there in 2010, we can have two or three returning series. We've got plans for a returning teen soap that we're developing at the moment. But like with everything else, it takes time. You're literally walking into a room with writers and saying, okay, what ideas have you got? What do you want to do? What do you like? I'm kind of taking it from there. They have to go away and write the scripts. You have to hand them into the commissioners. The commissioners feedback what they like. You go back to the writer. You redraft. You work. And that's how TV works. So hopefully, you know, this time next year, I'll have a few shows that I can talk about that are running that you guys are watching and enjoying.
We won't talk about Doctor Who, but the convention. You actually went to a Doctor Who convention when you were younger, didn't you?
Yeah.
And now you're here in the States, and it's sort of the first time that somebody really involved in the production of the new Doctor Who has come to a convention. I mean, how has it been for you? What's the experience been like?
It's been amazing. I meant before I came to... I've got one big cardboard box in my attic that has all my Doctor Who stuff. So, like, loads of Doctor Who monthlies and Doctor Who weeklies and Doctor Who annuals. And I wrote to Anthony Ainley when he was playing the Master, and just to tell him how fabulous I thought he was. And he wrote back to me on a piece of script for the Planet of Fire. I was like, oh, my God, Anthony Ainley's written to me. And then I turned it over and it was on a piece of script. I was like, oh, my God, I almost had my first orgasm, I think. the booklet for the convention I went to in London, I think I'm not sure what year it would be, 86 maybe, it was basically coincided with a first night of Trial of a Time Lord, because they showed us that in the convention hall. I remember that really vividly. And I went there, and Peter Davison was there, and Colin Baker was there, Nicola Bryant, who's been here this weekend, was there. So that was my convention. And so now, to
and
be
now
here,
you're on stage, you're the
I
star.
I know, it's amazing to be here and to be, you know, up on the stage. I did a photo session 2 days ago with Nicola Bryant and Fraser Hines and Wendy Padbury, and I was genuinely, it was 2 hours long, and I spent the whole 2 hours in this haze of disbelief, really, that I was sitting there, you know, involved in this. And it's really taken me aback, and I think somehow secretly that's kind of why, you know, I haven't done any kind of convention before, and why I was really nervous about coming here, because I kind of didn't really know whether I'd wee myself, really, to be honest.
Actually, that's just happened now, I think.
Just shaking my leg as we speak.
When you left Doctor Who, it must have obviously been quite an emotional time. I hear that your leaving do was quite interesting. Was there a certain film played at the leaving do? Could you tell us about that?
Russell and I, obviously, were good friends. We met on Spring Hill. And we would periodically, across the years, I mean, Spring Hill would be, I think, 1997, I think I did that. Across the years, Russell and I stayed in touch, and occasionally, on the 23rd of November, we would meet up and we would watch Doctor Who videos. One year, I showed him a Doctor Who video that I had made at the age of 17, written by my friend Simon Wellings, who was a fellow member of the Leeds Doctor Who group that I attended. Oh my God, I'm unzipping my forehead as we speak.
It's impressive.
In that video, which we shot on location at Leeds University on his video camera, as it was then, I played the Doctor in an episode called The Troubled Spirit, which saw the Doctor, the end of his regeneration cycle, returning home to Gallifrey. So I showed that to Russell, and it's you know, terrible. And we hooted with laughter. Anyway, when we came to make Doctor Who, he'd always bandied around the fact that he had seen me play Doctor Who. And I never showed it to anyone else, ever. David Tennant said he wanted to take me out for dinner, so David and I went out for dinner with another couple of people from the company. They got me drunk. And David said, look, you're leaving now. You've got to show me that video. You've just got to show me that video. So I protested. Eventually, they wore me down. Another couple of glasses of Pinot Grigio. And I went back to my flat, and I had to empty this vast box out and hunt through for VHS tapes, and I found it. I didn't have a VHS player in my flat, so we all haired across Cardiff Bay to David's apartment and watched this in David's apartment. And we all hooted and laughed at this. David leant down, took the video out of the machine, and I said, no, I'm keeping my eye on you because you're not going to nick that. Pressure. He said, no, he'd just been on Derren Brown and learnt how to palm things, I think. Because he gave me back a VHS, which I put in my pocket, and I thought that was it, that was the last thing. So then I turn up to my leaving do, and they show the entire thing to the crew. And I'm not exaggerating, I got underneath the table. I was so embarrassed.
I mean, we've got Steve Roberts here. Do you think we could have it on an extra on a DVD release?
No, because the first thing I made them do is give me all copies of this and promise that they would never show anybody. Oh, it's terrible. Sorry, Simon, if you're listening to this. It is really terrible. It's particularly terrible because it's me in it and I'm not very good.
That's great. Thanks very much, Phil, and good luck with all your endeavours in the future.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
End of Gallifrey 1, suffering from post-convention depression, mainly because it's been such a fantastic experience. What's been your highs and lows, John?
Well, I think the highs were Mr. Tony Michelle Haddock's fine performance of Moth Save My Doctor Who Scarf, which was impeccably handled by the technical crew. And the low light was probably being humiliated and patronised by a woman dressed up with two huge Dalek bumps on her breasts, who thought I was ridiculous for mentioning Thals and Carleds to her. Quite how that's supposed to work, I'm not sure. That aside, it's been a wonderful, wonderful convention.
And I agree, it's all very depressing now. It's like we can hear the voices of our departed friends in this chilly hotel lobby. It's been too cold here, that's the other thing. The weather's been absolutely terrible. Fucking awful.
It is rather depressing. It's the hotel now, which has been full of Doctor Who fans for the last few days, is now completely bereft of those kind of people. It's a bit like going to the Fitz on a Wednesday by mistake. Damon, highs and lows?
Highs, probably meeting lots of fantastic people. Convention unlike anything I think either of us have ever been to in our entire lives. Absolutely fantastic. Lows.
Often on the Business Convention.
Now, we did say that we should never speak of that again. What happens in Croydon stays in Croydon. Lowe's bar closing at 1 o'clock in the morning. Ridiculous.
But it has been amazing, and it's going to be very hard to leave this wonderful town where dreams are made.
So until next year at Galley, it's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Bowie said to me.